discussion for consent. Today's topic is Journey of the Soul. Journey of the Soul. And we'll start with a statement that we picked up. The universe is Brahma and Brahma. Brahma is the universally diffused unknowable in every atom of the universe. Brahma is the manifested source of all the differentiated permutations of principles in manifestation. Brahma, the unknowable, and Brahma, the knowable. We're invited by HPB to consider how it is that each human being within his own nature is Brahma and Brahma. Perhaps this talk will help us, will head us in that direction to scratch the surface of that. And this presentation, The Journey of the Soul, is given as a panel discussion. The first part approaches it from a more universal perspective in terms of the universal pilgrimage of every one of us. And then the second part goes to the particular of what's going on in any given lifetime. So there's an occult teaching that says nothing is created, but only transformed. Nothing can manifest itself in this universe, from a globe down to a vague, rapid thought that was not in the universe already. Everything on the subjective plane is an eternal is, as everything on the objective plane is an ever becoming. Everything is an ever becoming. Just another way of saying that everything is evolving. There's another statement. All is spirit. All is spirit and soul, ever evolving under the one rule of law. Well, today we're going to investigate ideas concerning spiritual evolution, or actually this whole month, we're investigating ideas of spiritual evolution each Sunday. Last week, we considered the opposing ideas of creation out of nothing, as opposed to evolution of the universe from within outward. And if we recall that the theosophical philosophy admits of no miracle, then it's natural to embark on this investigation from the perspective of spiritual evolution rather than creation, because indeed creation of anything out of absolute nothingness would be a miracle, which we dismiss out of hand. So we consider the path, the journey of the soul, a path embarked upon by every soul during the eternity of the universe which is in total a boundless plane, which is periodically the playground of numberless universes, incessantly manifesting and disappearing. We all are in that. We participate in that. We're not of that. That's not what and who we are. However, we are in that. So, how are things working out? Each one of us is a spark of the eternity. That eternity, which is the source of our universe. We are on a journey through the universe. That is what we're doing here. We're on a journey, a pilgrimage, where each an indivisible part of the integral whole. All of us are one with the whole. We emanate from the whole, and we are reabsorbed back again into it at the end of the grand cycle, and paradoxically We are always one with it, never separated from it, differentiated within it, but never separate from it. So this brings us to the title of our talk. Okay, the journey of the soul. This journey is said to be an obligatory pilgrimage through cycles of incarnations, according to cyclic and karmic law, during the whole period of manifestation. But why? The how can be interesting, and Theosophy addresses the how. And we can learn the principles of the how. We don't have to worry about the where and the when, because it's all going on here and now. And it has always been going on right here and right now. We are all on the journey. This is reality. Let's see what we can figure out about that journey. Well, needless to say, the ancient ideals that recognize the truth and the value of our pilgrimage has been lost to the ways and the means of our modern day world. Yet still, there are those few seekers. There are still questions to be answered by the seekers. There's that internal yearning that we make efforts to assuage, the longing that only a deeper understanding of our pilgrimage, a deeper understanding of our pilgrimage can satisfy, which is to say, there are among us those whose priority it is to learn a little bit more about who I am and why I am here, who internally sense that there's more to this life while on the earth than what we can see, that what we can touch or hear. And we're open to putting in the time and the effort to find out what that is. What is our purpose? What are we here to do in this life? What are we here to do in this body, in our family, in this world? These are questions, hopefully, that we'll address today, many of which the next speaker will address. But for now, what we need to know is that we, each and all, are emanations of the soul of the universe. We are one with that soul. All of the powers, forces, and functions of divine nature are within us, and we are one with each and all with whom we cross paths with in every lifetime. Continuing this evolutionary journey, this evolutionary pilgrimage as human beings, it's helpful to bear in mind that we each have been and still are in the process of passing through every form in the phenomenal world. And as human beings, we by now have each and all acquired individuality as an individualized mind being. We've done so by self-induced and self-devised efforts, each and all ascending through the degrees of intelligence under divine law, from the simplest beings in the universe to where we find ourselves now. And there's the statement, the future of a soul that follows the law is the future of a thing whose splendor and brilliance springs eternal. So we're on this journey. Our next speaker will share ideas on the particular opportunities and travels during that journey in any one lifetime.
Wow. We're all that and more. The journey of the soul. Well, we can look at it as a universal that we have involved ourselves into matter. Now, we're evolving back into spirit. Well, how can we make that statement? How do we know that? How do we know what's going on with the soul? Have you identified that soul that you are? Well, that's what the task is. And then we begin to understand that there has been a journey, that we have not lived but one life. We have lived many lives, and this is just one of those, in but a blink of an eye in eternity. But it is the process of the enfoldment of the soul. That is why we're here, for the experience of the soul, for no other reason. This soul is unfolding, and it unfolds by becoming in contact with all of the lower kingdoms. It says that it's the obligatory pilgrimage of all souls. Well, everything is soul. Everything comes from that absolute. So everything is on a pilgrimage back into spirit again. But that pilgrimage is that sacrifice of taking physical form, entering that mansion of suffering and pain to uplift all of existence on this evolutionary process. It's like the lower kingdoms are always sacrificing to the kingdom above it for its evolutionary journey. And that is what we are doing, sacrificing ourselves to that great evolutionary journey, that we are all a part of that universal oversoul. But what is that universal oversoul? Well, that absolute can't manifest. It can't, it's too pure. So what comes forth, the Theosophists we call buddhi, but it is that capacity of that oversoul that they call alaya. They call it, anima mundi. It's that essence from that absolute. But in that essence is mind. It's latent, but it's there, only waiting to be developed or coming forth. So, as our first speaker was talking about, how here we are, we have evolved these bodies. We have evolved all these functions. We have been a part of a long evolutionary process to where we are now. If anything, this philosophy teaches us is gratitude. Because where we are now, we should be very grateful that we have evolved to this point. And now we have this opportunity to direct our energies in a more in the most positive direction we could, or could we could imagine. And that's what we do. We try to imagine. We try to imagine a better world. We try to imagine our better selves. But what image do we put before us? Well, this whole pilgrimage is for the experience of the soul. so that the human form only reflects that growth, and that man, all life, is perfectible. So, what ideal do we have? Is there an ideal? Is there a place that we're going to journey to, or we can journey to? We've had examples all throughout our history of these great beings who have come and have taught the world, from Jesus to Buddha to Socrates and to Plato, the Confucius. There's the list goes on and on. That man has always been aided on his spiritual journey. So here we are. We've got all this together. And we look out around us and we go, oh my, what's going on? But we're still on a spiritual journey. What is it? Or where do we see the chaos? Well, we said that our task is to identify that soul, that perceiver, that witness. And we all have that witness. We can look back as the older we get, we certainly have that witness. We reflect even on a daily basis. We are watchers. We are always watching. And the irony of it, where our problems really come up, is that we are watchers of ourselves. We may not think, but we are constantly watching. And we want to do better. And we strive to do better. But sometimes the better does not show itself as we would expect. So, what do we do on this journey? Well, we have left sign marks from our past living that will remind us that we are soul beings, that we are mind beings, that we are on this journey, and that we have coming to us the effects of causes we have set up. So, how do we deal with that? Well, we do what's before us because it needs to be done without looking for the fruits of our labor. Be detached. Be governed by that witness and that doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. We live our life in the moment, and we live our lives in association with other human beings. On our evolutionary journey, we are told we have one obligation if we want to free ourselves, is be kind. Be kind to the world around you and be kind to yourself. That this evolutionary journey is la long and winding. And the sooner we give up the personal for that individuality that we all are, so that universal brotherhood is a fact, so that all of our strife, all of our selfishness can slowly be dissolved into a union. Because we are all united. What separates us is the personality, that feeling of separateness. We are all part of that universal oversoul. Alaya, Dhyanamundi. That life, we are all part of it. So the soul, our soul, so where are we going? Well, we're evolving forward. Well, how do we know that? Well, theosophy says numbers have meaning. And during this great period of evolution, seven has a specific meaning, and 10 and 12. But if we look at this, that septenary, we see that throughout nature, and we see it throughout the environment, the sounds of nature, that there are seven notes in the scale, there are seven colors in the rainbow, but there are seven constituent parts to man. And that man is a mind being. He has an Atma Buddhi Manas. That is his trinity. That's what we all are as self-conscious beings. We are that trinity. But we have in operation the four, lower aspects of our passions, our desires, our life principle, our astral body, and the physical form. Those are under control of the mind. The mind associated with our lower nature. So on our evolutionary journey, we are to make abeyance with that lower nature. We are to bring it under the control and to the use of our higher. That's part of our evolutionary journey. That's our self-induced and self-devised means on this journey. How do we do that? How do we bring unity in ourselves and to those around us? Well, as a theosophist, we have to educate ourselves, but with spiritual knowledge. And this movement gives us access to that spiritual knowledge. Again, theosophy is only for those who want it. And theosophy means that we have to educate ourselves. We have to let the mind expand and free it from the shackles of our religious upbringing, the norms and mores of the society around us. We have to free it so that it can imagine greater things. And as we grow, as we develop control of our lower natures, we become more of a self-induced and self-directed being. We take control of our existence rather than karma and life around us. We begin through the practice of loving deeds and kindness. We begin to unfold our true nature. So that is our journey. Our journey is to find that witness, find that perceiver. Mark the journey that this soul has been on already. You have, all of us have been on a journey. When we were trying to, where does all this energy come from? Where does all this spark within every individual come from to come forward? That there's this electricity within the universe, that it's found everywhere. It animates everything. And in our studies we found the word Fohat, and we go, well, what's that? Well, it is divine love. That's how the ancients described it. Divine love? Yes. That is what electrifies all of us, is that love which we are all a spark of. That is the absolute. It is divine love. So that's what we are. And our duty is to expose that divine love in our lives, in our very being. Struggle with our lower nature. But that's not who we are. As the first speaker said, everything is constantly changing. We are constantly moving. We are constantly becoming. There is an ex exchange of life within our bodies every second, every moment. It's just constant. We are constantly becoming. So, you are in need of a foundation. And Theosophy provides that foundation. We are all part of that universal oversoul. We are all in this together. We are all on this journey. And we either can pay attention to it and try to be a force within it and direct those currents of our life to something beneficial to humanity. How can we truly benefit each other? By being kind in our heart to ourselves and to everyone around us. So we're on this journey. We open it up for questions and comments and Theosophy Hall.
So, if we are not to look for the fruits of our labor, why bother? What's the incentive? What's in it for me? It sounds like, what's the attraction?
Well, that's the problem. What's in it for me? That's got us into more problems than a few. And it's part of our understanding that is we have to let go. Let go and be a little unselfish and think of the other instead of thinking of ourselves. We all have that, me, 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 me. That's how we sometimes wake up in the morning. Me, me, me. No, but it's I think we've realized that it's us. It's us, all of us. And we try to invite an environment of friendship and an open-mindedness. Yes, SL. Do you have a follow-up in Theosophy Hall?
There's another hand at Theosophy Hall, so don't know
Oh.
if you want to put them in the queue or take them now.
Well, I'll take SL first and then we'll
Okay,
back to you.
sure.
Let them think about that one,
Very
right?
good, thank you.
SL?
This journey of the soul. Now, normally when we think of a journey, we think of going to a certain place. And maybe some people might think of it's a journey to heaven or a journey to nirvana. But as we are thinkers, we were wondering, is this journey of the soul not to any specific place, but rather to a different or a higher or a better state of awareness or consciousness? That's what the journey of the soul is, a journey to reawakening or better understanding of ourselves and others.
Well, when we think of this journey of the soul, if we think of it as a pilgrimage, that's exactly the issue. If we, There are religions of the world where for it's an ancient tradition that there are pilgrimages. And it's not as though they're just going on a vacation to see the sights. A pilgrimage has a purpose. It's to investigate and find and learn, to interpret what the experiences are. There's always something going on in the experiences outside of ourselves that have something to tell us on the inside of ourselves. And so it's a matter of interpreting what's around us. So this journey is a pilgrimage. And the invitation is to recognize that in this life, we can talk about the broad scheme about the pilgrimage of the monad, but each day that monad, which is who we are, has the opportunity to search for and find and discern the purpose of the day. So it's not time and distance, it's qualities and understanding and right interpretation, which eventually will result in the wisdom and the knowledge of who we actually are. We attain that by our own self-induced and self-devised efforts, and it comes about by working together with others and making the effort to help others along the way to fulfill their purpose as well. If you can't help others fulfill their purpose, you're never going to fulfill your purpose.
All right, you have the yes, the Theosophy Hall, please.
God. Oh, did you have anything? Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. This is King. How are y'all doing this morning? So, I think earlier in the presentation, you talked about the journey into, I guess, manifestation or material, and you have to forgive me if I'm not using the right semantics, being like a sacrifice of suffering. And I've heard this commonly. It's not the first time I've heard this idea of coming into the material as suffering. Buddha talks about it, all these people talk about suffering, right? But it almost to me seems like, it's kind of like a glass half empty way of kind of viewing material existence. So what, where does, why is it so common? And I guess I have no familiarity with theosophy. I guess since we're here in the theosophical context, why is this a sacrifice of suffering? I don't see why it has to be suffering. That just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like it can be, but I don't see why it has that has to be like what we're doing here.
Excellent question.
Yeah, sure. So that's the key to it. And we think in our talk, we don't think
But
that.
could we, before we start, could we just reiterate the
What's the
question?
point of suffering? What's the
Oh,
point?
like, why does it have to be that? Like,
Why does it?
why
Why
does
does?
it have to be that? Like, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
why
It
does
doesn't
it seem like it has to be that to me?
Why does it have to be?
Why did okay, well, so we'll start with this. Why does it have to be suffering? First, the purpose of the soul coming into manifestation is to learn who we are and to grow in wisdom and become self-conscious in spirit. Now, that has to do with growth. Growth doesn't have to be painful. But there are certain rules of the road that we have to follow. And if we abuse our talents or powers, then we're creating a scenario where there's going to be lessons that come back to us. And it's really a matter of our attitude. So if a soul, as we said, the last sentence we said was a soul, the future of a soul that follows the law is the future of a thing whose splendor and brilliance spring eternal. The future of a soul who does not follow the law is a mess. But that soul, all souls always have the opportunity to evolve and grow. But to the extent that we get off track, to the extent that we start identifying as this body and identify as the things around us, to the degree that we lose sight of who we are and who our fellow beings are, thinking that we're all separate, we're creating causes, the result of which are going to eventually force us to release the false ideas and attain back to the true ideas. And it's the releasing of false ideas that can be very painful along the way. So any suffering that goes on, it's not the purpose of the universe to make us feel pain. Any suffering that goes on is the result of what we have done along the way, whether in this lifetime or a previous lifetime, or what we have not done that we should have done along the way. So, generally speaking, it could be said, had we not lost sight of who we are, then a complete and full participation in the divine law of evolution would not be a painful experience. But we're at this stage of our development, and there are certain things that we need to participate in, and which will result in our growth. And if we don't do it the easy way, we're going to do it the hard way. And the more we learn about this, the more we recognize it's a choice. Any
Yep.
suffering that exists in the life of any human being is the result of choices that he or she made, as well as participated in their family, in the choices of their nation, in the choices of all of humanity. So we're all in it together, and we have to pull everybody out of it together.
And we have to remember that as spiritual beings, we have evolved in matter. Okay? So what does that mean? That we have gone into matter and into darkness, into ignorance, and come forward and brought all of life forward with us. So that we have to understand that, that when we come from darkness, there are things that we don't understand. We suffer from our own actions. We suffer from ourselves, from our attachments, from that darkness within our own nature, that suffering is, it seems like it's the only thing that makes us pay attention. Because when things are going really well, we don't say, well, gee whiz, why is it going so good? What's going on? What, no, we, but suffering produces change. Produces change. SL?
So that thought that the glass being half full, well, whether we see it as half full or half empty, really, it's a matter of perspective, attitude, and what turns around, what changes our attitude from seeing life and the obstacles as suffering to that of life and its obstacles as being joyous opportunities to participate in the growth of everything around us, our particular mission and purpose in life. Well, it's knowledge, it's awareness as was presented. And to the extent that we make that switch, we find that new attitude, that's a tremendous indication that we've made progress in the journey of the soul. That's how we know we've made some progress in any one life, where we can begin to see our obstacles as opportunities for growth, rather than as suffering.
We would only suggest to aid us in that work is our understanding of reincarnation and karma. If we begin to understand and appreciate that, and we find hope. We find hope for the world, we find hope for ourselves.
So we just would mention, so all suffering is the result of a cause, and the cause of suffering is always attachment to things that are not real, are not necessary. So as was mentioned by the questioner, how do we switch? It's one thing to be attached to the things around us and to want it and own it and be ambitious. It's another thing to be appreciative of the things around us and grateful for what we are, what we have, so that we can use it in service to others. But we have to be careful about attachments from to physical things that we think that we need to fulfill our ego. An attachment to inner things, such as certain feelings, such as certain false ideas. So the benefit of theosophy in this world is by a thorough study of these ideas and a comparing and contrasting what we hold to be true versus what theosophy would teach. When we make the switch to a more universal way of thinking, it starts making sense just to let go and participate in the law rather than to have expectations and own and control it. Rather, aspire just to be and to serve as opportunities present themselves. We know theosophy holds hands been up.
Okay, we have a couple hands here. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Bhagavad Gita talks a lot about doing one's duty as it comes to us, not expecting anything in return. So that is like a selfless way of living, is if we do it that way. If when something, maybe family or out in the, just going to the store, there's something going on, we think that maybe we should be, involved with, not expecting people to say, "Oh, you were wonderful," but just to do it because it is to be done. And just one last comment about that. Mr. Judge talks about looking at life and things that come to you as opportunities and not as obstacles. So if we can change our mind, because anything, any of our duty that comes to us is, both of the speakers talked about making choices. And so this is what it is. We make the choices, but we have to do them without expecting anything in return.
So perhaps, did you get that?
Just you can summarize, please.
Yeah, just do your duty because it's there without expecting anything in return. Look at things universally, not personally. What's for the greater good of all? And we think it would be good to maybe talk about individuality versus personality to make that distinction.
Well, the idea of individuality and personality is the same idea of the perceiver, the witness. We are in a struggle with the personality because we would like to expose more of the individuality, which is locked up in brotherhood. So, there is that struggle. It's the struggle is portrayed in the Bhagavad Gita, that struggle between the higher and the lower. This is what is going on right now. We are struggling with our lower nature, our lower mind, and we're trying to elevate it. And again, through spiritual knowledge, we can do that.
SL.
So, in this journey of the soul in any one life, as soul beings, we incarnate into a vehicle called the personality, and we identify with it more or less according to our spiritual growth. So, it would seem that getting to the particulars, every day of our lives, there's two great purposes for us in this journey of the soul. One is, as was said, to get as much juice as we can extract from the experience of life. We're there to learn. Get everything you can out of it. Learn everything you can. Live it to the full, and you're with all your understanding, all your insight, and all your opportunity to help others. Bring everything to it. The other thing is that look at that personality of yours and to see how the way we think, the way we feel, our desires, whether or not they interfere or they don't interfere with that journey, with that attempt. And every day we'll have a battle or an opportunity to weaken those ties and strengthen the higher. So, if we could just focus on those two things, weakening the ties and the influence of our lower nature, and bringing everything we have of our higher nature to the moment and to the help of others, we are well on our way in this spiritual journey.
Thank you. The Osby Hall.
Go ahead.
So then it seems that the joy experienced in selfless action is the incentive, as long as you're not attached to it. But then the question is, if we're all part of the universal oversoul and we're all made of light and love, why is being passive so dangerous?
What's the danger of passivity?
So, all right. So, what is the danger of passivity? Well, when we live a passive life, whether it's going into passive trances as opposed, which is distinctly different from meditation, when we zone out in front of a TV, Madison Avenue knows if we can get the population to zone out in front of a TV, we can sell them more Coca-Cola. They know it. Okay. So we can influence them. So a passive mind can be influenced more so by external forces. It's the difference to the extreme, it's the difference between a medium and an adept. An adept has complete control of his principles and of the lower potencies around him. We need to make the effort to maintain control of ourselves. Passivity is it allows influences to distract us from who and essentially we're turning over control of at least some small portion of ourselves to something that has no business being there, you know. Whereas all human beings in their essence, in their essence, are the universal oversoul. That doesn't mean that all the forces around us that we would open ourselves to by living a passive life are living according to the purposes of the soul. No, that's what human beings are here to do and to influence the world in that direction.
So the question?
The question was, if everything is an emanation from the oversoul, why would it ever be dangerous for us to be passive and allow ourselves to be influenced by external forces? If
The
you know if
awesome
you
ball.
know, if, you know it's you have to control your own mind. You have to decide what's going to go into your mind rather than leave it to someone else. Yes, the Osby Hall.
Well, that is the great danger. We are to keep ourselves active and engaged and focused as much as possible on these ideas to gain a new perspective, an inward perspective, but we project it outwardly. We are the observer of all that takes place. And in reality, we're not our personality, which changes from lifetime to lifetime. We're not what we do for a living. We're not this body. We're not our social whatever. On social media, we're not that persona. We're none of that. We're mind beings eternally evolving toward the home we came from, which was spirit, with all of the knowledge gained in the interim. And it is said that spiritual knowledge is of loving deeds the child. So if we have that altruistic attitude and mindset, and we do get great joy, it's natural to get joy out of helping others. That's the greatest joy there is, really. It's not a selfish joy, it's a universal joy. And we did have a hand here. We don't know if they're still relevant.
Yeah, sure. So we come to this like idea of choice, and you know, it's been brought up a few times by different speakers here about this idea of like this choice we have. And I want to somewhat relate that to, you know, the mind and the persona, you know, essentially being somebody's, I don't know everybody's names, talking about that being basically the carrier mechanism. So when I think about this idea of choice, I don't know that I really understand that. Like, I know that it feels like we have make choices. And, you know, you can decide on certain things, or you can position your focus on certain things. And ultimately, you know, experientially, that would be a good description. But is that the deeper truth or the reality of it? Because, you know, if I take a step.
Theosophy Hall, you're muted.
Viewing life through the eyes of the observer, it feels less like making a choice and more like a choice arriving.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we're in our last minute of our meeting or so. Go ahead.
We're
not closing out the meeting because we're not sharing.
Well, we didn't hear what the question was, but
the question is
okay. Briefly,
I guess the question is, from that perspective, is there really a choice, or is there an I that actually makes a choice, or would that be a more accurate, deeper truth of the principle of a choice?
No, the only God that makes a choice in our lives is the God within the individual, and our choice is to follow the divine law or not. And there are results for every choice. Yes, JCS.
That phrase, the choice arriving to us, is wonderful, because all of the past choices of all of our past lives, as well as all the days and moments of this life, set up cycles of impress that return to us. So sometimes in the moment, while we're making the attempt to be as soulful and as universal as possible, obstacles or past choices will come back to confront us. And in the creative moment, we have the power to recognize the returning impress and to react or to respond in a way to make it better, to uplift it. But we're not lockstepped into suffering those returning causes.
Well, we have managed to consume an hour of our time, and I think it's been well spent, and we couldn't better end on a better note than the last question and statement. But I would like to remind all of us that we are here for the experience of the soul. And the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia invites everyone to participate in our programs and in our programming. So if you want to volunteer and help, please. It's the effort. It's the attitude. And all help is appreciated. Have a great day, great week, great life.
Thank you.